And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all don't talk about this show goes like from Huntsville back on over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa back on over to Gadsden. I mean, down to that loveliest little village on the plains we call Auburn, straight across the line to Fort Benning, and then big old patches of North Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. And that's just radio, and then there's all y'all live streaming and podcasting. We appreciate all of you. Listen, the bottom line is the only reason why we do this is because of y'all. So thank you so much wherever you catch the show. Listen, I'm not going to spend too much more time. I want to get to our guest. So this is going to be someone who's no stranger to many of you. Dr. Carol Swain is someone who is widely seen as a national commentator. You've probably seen her on Fox or other places. I have. And I'll tell you right now, aside from being a frequent television analyst, she has an amazing personal story. I mean, she is perhaps, you know, what exactly America is supposed to be like. The fact that anybody can be anything in this country is embodied in who our next guest is. Dr. Carol Swain, despite having a life that some would have said would have been difficult to overcome, she has got graduate degrees. I'm talking about from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, her PhD, Master's in Legal Studies from Yale University. She's a retired political science and law professor at Vanderbilt. And Dr. Carol Swain is going to be the keynote speaker next week at the Eagle Forum of Alabama's dinner, where I look forward to being the MC. And she's on the line. Enough talking. Dr. Carol Swain, thanks for joining Right Side Radio. How are you?
I am doing great, and it's so good to talk with you. And I am quite excited about visiting Alabama and meeting old and new friends.
Well, thank you for that. And listen, Dr. Swain, I thought I knew a little about you until I read your bio and realized you have a story that's even bigger than I even imagined. I don't know what you're going to bring to next week's keynote address, but would you mind just giving folks a little of your background? Because I said a moment ago, I think you sort of embody what America can be, if you don't mind.
My life speaks to the American dream. I was one of 12 children, born and raised in rural poverty in southwestern Virginia. I was born in 54. That was the year of the Brown versus Board of Education desegregation school, a case that was supposed to integrate the public schools across America. I attended segregated schools up until the late 1960s. And I can tell you that I grew up at a time when there was a lot of optimism. Like being a high school, I ended up dropping out of high school, having my first child at age 17. I was married because back in those days, there was a lot of emphasis on getting married and having children after you were married. Right. And so I had my first child when I was 17. By the time I was in my early 20s, I had three small children. One died of a crib death, and I ended up getting a high school equivalency in 1976, going to a community college, getting the first of five degrees. I have a degree in business, a four-year degree in criminal justice. I graduated magna cum laude while working, with the emphasis on working, 40 hours a week, nights and weekends at the community college library. Wow. So I went to a four-year school, Roanoke College in Salem, Virginia, but I had a job at the community college where I had just graduated. And then I went on to get a criminal justice degree, two degrees in political science and one in law. And I can tell you that I did not sit down and plan all of that, that God placed people in my path, and they steered me.
Yeah.
And I took advantage of the opportunities that were before me, and I worked very hard, and I believed in America, and I grew up at a time when what I heard was that if you worked hard and got an education, you could make something of yourself.
Wow. Well, you certainly proved that, and I want to ask you just a minute ago when you were describing all that, which is just what a great story. You said, I want to put emphasis on working, is what you said. Tell me why it was important for you to put emphasis on working.
Because there's so many people that either don't want to work or they don't want to start at the bottom. And I started as a work-study student. That's like the lowest of the low, 10 hours a week at the community college. And because the state employees would call out sick and there would be a crisis at the library, I had an opportunity because they would have a crisis. I would always volunteer to work at night. And so the director created a full-time job for me nights and weekends, and I had state benefits. I worked there for 5 years, long enough to have benefits, and I was able to go to school during the day, and in the evenings or on the weekends when I worked, it was a perfect job for a student because when there were not anyone using the library, I could do my homework. And it's like I was not a devout Christian believer at the time, but I cannot think of a more perfect situation than what I had. But to be able to have that opportunity, I had to, you know, be willing to volunteer to work when there was a crisis in the work environment because the state employees did not show up.
Yeah, it's the work ethic. I agree with you. My pastor said not long ago, if we don't quit, we win. And I agree with that. Part of it is staying in the fight, and the other part of it is the willingness to follow the path you think God's opening up for you. Let me ask you this, because I want to make sure I get to it in our time. I know you're speaking next week at the Eagle Forum. I've been a fan of Eagle Forum for years. I used to be in state politics, and I used their research and their advocacy at times. One of the things that I take note of, though, in your bio is that politically, you identified as a Democrat for many years, but then in 2009, which I'm looking back, I think that was the Obama era, you actually switched to the Republican Party. Can I ask you what brought you to the point that you actually switched parties?
Well, in the late 1990s and early 2000s, I became a devout Christian believer. And as I grew in my faith, I became more and more conservative. And when President Obama was elected, I did not vote for him. I started moving away from the Democratic Party as I grew in my faith and I became an independent. But I was so concerned about the direction of the country, and I was, you know, pretty much a new believer, and there was so much I couldn't understand. I could not understand how a nation at the time, 78% of Americans professed to be Christians, and yet they were electing ungodly leaders, and they were following such a path. And I wrote a book, Be the People, A Call to Reclaim America's Faith and Promise. And the theme next week is A Call to Reclaim America's Faith and Promise. And I intend, you know, to say a little bit about my background, because there's more to the story of how I ended up becoming a university professor. I taught at Princeton early tenure, as well as Vanderbilt. But this book, Be the People, A Call to Reclaim America's Faith and Promise, I believe that it was God-breathed. And I talk about, it was inspired by what I saw around me. And I felt like in a nation where 78% of the people profess to be Christian, if we were electing the kind of leaders that we were electing, that people either didn't know the tenets of their faith or what was taking place around them. And there's a chapter in my book, Be the People, that talks about America's religious roots. And the fact that we have a constitution and the preamble is we the people, and that we the people, we elect the politicians. They enact the policies and programs on our behalf, and if we don't like what we see, there's a process for changing it, but we are as responsible and as guilty as they are because we actually put them in office and we allow them to do much of what they've gotten away with.
Well, I think that I can say amen on several levels to that whole mode. Thank you very much for that. Let me ask you this too, because there's so much. I'd love to sit down and have a lengthy conversation with you, I think, but let me just ask you this. One of the things you've also been known for, I think, is your ability to bridge race relations. And you've been an advocate for race relations and speaking on that quite a bit. Can you describe your thoughts on that?
It's just that I would say that I grew up at a time when there was not a lot of racial hatred around me. I lived out in the country, so I didn't participate in the civil rights movement, but I watched the civil rights movement. I knew what was taking place, but I've just always cared about other people, and I saw and I've seen them as other people. And one of the things that helped me be successful in college is that I never saw myself as handicapped. I never felt like I was a victim because I was poor, I'm black, I'm a woman, I have children. At one point, I'm a divorcee. I have all of these things that I could use as excuses. I've never seen myself as a victim. And I think that God has given me the gift of transparency even before I knew God, because I became a Christian believer in my 40s. Up until that time, I was spiritual. I knew that there was something larger than me guiding my life, but I was not a Christian. But I believe that my life has been a gift from God, and that He has also gifted me with the ability to see human beings as for what they are. And I believe that we are all brothers and sisters, you know, in Christ, and that the people that, you know, disagree with us, they hate us, you know, that you can have compassion for them because you know that they're so lost.
Well, and thank you for that. And this show stands for that. I mean, this is obviously a conservative talk show, but I make no bones about the fact that I'll say Jesus is Lord every single day. And so that testimony coming from you, especially being a public figure like you are, is huge. Listen, in the last couple of minutes or so we got together, let me ask you this. There's been a lot of stuff in the headlines over the last few years especially. And it's not like it's not been unheard of. The 60s were turbulent and all that. But a lot of stuff's been in our headlines about college campuses and the divisiveness we've seen on some campuses and the effort by the Trump administration to have to deal with anti-Semitism or with, you know, pro-Palestinian protests or, you know, any number of things on college campuses. As a retired professor yourself, having taught at Princeton and at Vanderbilt, two vaunted universities, what are your thoughts on the state of relations right now on college campuses? Are they a lost cause, or are we seeing a trend moving back in a conservative direction? What do you think?
I'll never say that they are lost cause. I think that we have had, you know, their soul laid bare, and we know that it's empty, and that the Marxism took over the campuses. And if you want to study history, you know, we can trace back to when it started, the turbulent 1960s, and just how some of those radicals who were out there, you know, protesting any and everything and involved even in violence in the 60s, that some of them became university professors, some of them became, you know, like university presidents, that they have taken over those institutions. But I think we're making a lot of progress as far as taking them back. They got most of the universities. They have not gotten them all, and I'm sad to it hurts me to report to people that want to believe otherwise that a lot of the, quote, Christian schools, or schools that they're supporting financially that they believe are Christian schools, they too have been infiltrated. But there's hope, because we know what's taking place, and I think we know what to do. And with President Trump, I believe holding them accountable to the laws that govern us when it comes to Harvard University and the anti-Semitism against Jews, that's a violation of the civil rights of Jewish people. When it comes to affirmative action and DEI and a lot of things that have taken place in our society, you know, over the last 40 or 50 years, much of that was always a violation of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, as well as the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. And so right now the ship is being righted, and I believe that most universities, to survive, they will have to clean up their act, and they will also have to open up their doors once again to conservative voices.
Well, and I hope it's true, because I think the college campuses were always designed to be the place where discourse could happen. Even if you didn't agree, you could have discourse, and too often we're seeing that shut down. Dr. Swain, we're going to have to leave it there, but I look forward to seeing you in person next week at the Eagle Forum of Alabama dinner. Thank you for who you are, for what you stand for. Thank you for the work you've done, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, we're taking a break right now. What an amazing lady. Listen, I didn't even scratch the surface on her story. I'll tell you a little more when we get back. How about that? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.